Hello and welcome to Moaz. If you've been following the news lately, you'll know that Moaz has shifted its operations to Southeast Asia. We've gone to Bangladesh to help the Rohingya refugees arriving from Myanmar. Over 500,000 men, women and children have walked or made the sea crossing so far. Those who've survived tell harrowing stories of the journey and how they were forced to leave. But this isn't the first time it's happened. The history of persecution and migration runs deep for this Muslim minority. Generations of Rohingya living in Rakhine State have gone through an almost perpetual tension within their region, forcing them to leave or return when the situation improved. The events which led to this recent migration are no different. In this podcast, we're going to learn about what happens after they've made it to one of the many camps in Bangladesh. To guide us through them is Pablo Gallego, data analyst and GIS mapper with Exchange.org. He's carrying out a survey on the journeys and experiences of those arriving in the camps. We open on a rainy morning at the start of September, 2 weeks into the crisis. As the tuk-tuk drives through Cox's Bazaar, the town's newest arrivals line either side of its muddy, chaotic path.
So when I got there was actually the beginning of the crisis, and there was a lack of coordination, and due to the number of Rohingya people entering the Cox's Bazaar at the time, you could see people everywhere, not only in the camps but by the roads, moving from one town to another town. So yeah, they were basically everywhere. The new arrivals were actually trying to find a place to stay, but there were also people that already found a settlement, so they were building their houses.
How many camps did you visit? And what kinds of ages and demographics are you seeing in these camps?
I visited like 7 camps. But when I say camps, don't think they're like consolidated camps. Sometimes are places where they stay for a while, where they stay for a short period of time before they are relocated to a permanent camp. So I would say 7 locations. And the range of ages is any range, because they are entire families. We are not talking about part of the population moving from Myanmar to Cox's Bazaar, but we are talking about the entire family, from babies to 85 or 90 years old. The whole families were moving into Cox's Bazaar.
Can you give me a sense of what you can see, smell and hear when you're in the camps?
So what I could see is hunger, and I saw that people had like primary needs, as basically having a shelter, having a place to live and having food to eat, basically. Obviously, because of the the amount of people moving to Cox's Bazaar in a very short period of time, there was basically a lot of noise in the camps, NGOs providing food, so there was like a very, very noisy, I would say.
What kinds of conditions are the Rohingya currently facing in the camps?
So that depends on which type of camp we are talking about. If we are talking about the new settlements, the conditions, basically the primary needs for them were building their tent. One of the questions we have is what do you need as a first option, second option, and third option? And primary, what they need is a shelter, is a place to live. So the conditions were very basic for them. They needed, you know, having a home and having food. That's what problem they are facing right now in the camps. Also the fact that they being relocated from one camp to another one is also a problem. They were told by the local authorities that they had to move to other camps. That means that they had to put down the tent and to build another one.
What did the Rohingya refugees you spoke to tell you about their journeys to the camps?
Most of the Rohingya people who fled Rakhine State, they crossed the Naf River. And they crossed the Naf River depending on where they come from, they crossed the river through different points. In some occasions, the river was very shallow, so they managed to cross just by foot. In other occasions, they had to cross by small boats.
All the seven locations you visited, which one gave you a sense of the rawness of the situation?
I've been to this camp, which is close to Kutampalong. It's called Bulukhali. So basically, that was a virgin area before. It was like a place with no buildings, just forest. And they basically, the refugees, they were allocated to that area, and they started building the entire camp. When I say camp, you might think it's, you know, like a very organized camp, but to me, it was pretty much like building a new town, a new city. You know, it wasn't organized by any NGO, but they were actually building their own city with their own tools, using local materials such as bamboo and, you know, whatever they could find to build their houses. So there, I could understand pretty much what they were, you know, their primary needs. You know, they needed mostly build their home, not to get sick. That camp was pretty much, you know, you could understand what they were facing.
During these visits, how did you feel experiencing this?
I was pretty much surprised by what I was witnessing, you know. I thought it was going to be different. I thought it was going to be, you know, something more organized. I didn't know what a refugee camp means, you know. I thought it was completely different. And what I found is it's a group of people moving to a virgin area and starting building a new society. That was the thing that struck me the most, just seeing how society starts from the scratch.
Who is conducting the food distribution in the camps? And can you describe how this looks and sounds like when it takes place?
3 weeks I spent there, the help wasn't organized at all. So there were NGOs that were trying to organize the delivery, but then you had all the local NGOs, like a very, very small NGOs providing aid in a very random way. So they were delivering on the road, blocking the roads and the infrastructures. So it was like a completely chaos from my point of view. Once I remember, I got stuck in a traffic, and it took me 4 hours to get from Cox Bazar to Nayapara, a journey that usually takes you 1 hour. It took me like 4 hours and a half. And that was mostly due to the fact that all these local NGOs were delivering on the main road. So the Rohingyas were there trying to get the food, and there was no way to circulate.
Hello? What do you think the future holds for this crisis?
This crisis is developing very fast. We expect to see things moving on in the coming weeks. I believe it's a crisis that is going to take long to change, but things are moving actually very fast. In terms of what is going to be the situation in Bangladesh, I hope in a month time the situation will change, because what I've seen was very, very bad. It was the first time in my life I saw hunger, and now I know what it means. I had heard and I had seen on television, but that was the first time in my life I saw people feeling hunger. What the future holds, this is something I don't know what is going to happen with nearly a million people that fled the Rakhine State. We were asking this question during the surveys, and I would say 90% of the people, they would only go back to Rakhine State if the situation changes, and the situation is not very likely to change. I pretty much think that the future for these refugees is going to be Cox's Bazar.
At the time of recording this podcast, aid agencies like IOM and UNICEF are developing their response to the crisis. Shelters, water, food, and vital medicine are now arriving in the camps. With the start of the rainy season in Bangladesh, the government is working to move people from the many swamp routes and into larger camps. We're joining the aid efforts by setting up our own aid stations. The first one opened on the 14th of October, and they'll provide round-the-clock help to the refugees and host communities. If you like this podcast, don't forget to hit like, comment, and subscribe for more podcasts from us. You can follow us on our social media. Check out our latest updates on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Audioboom. Or you can support our rescue missions by giving whatever you can to help save lives at sea. From all of us here at MOAS, goodbye.